You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour, Doug Hagman Radio Show. For today, October 1st, it's Monday, October 1st, 2018, day number 620 of the attack against the deep state, that is the Donald Trump presidency in office, 620 days today. It's day number 503 of the special counsel investigation, and 36 days until the midterm elections. Just want to get that out there. We are witnessing, obviously, the systematic obstruction and planned destruction of the United States, of our constitutional republic specifically. And I have to apologize. I still have a dental issue. Got to apologize for that because it, wow, does that sometimes it hurts when I talk and say certain words. It was an extraction gone bad, I guess. Leaving an exposed sinus, and I'm being treated for that. So anyway, so forgive me and just bear along with me as I attempt to get through this hour. There's a lot of things going on, and I'm going to hit all of the important items that happened over the weekend. We saw a lot of major issues on a national level. Some good, some not so good. We saw, of course, the hammering out, in case you missed this, of the North American trade deal, okay, U.S., Mexico, Canada, that's in its final stages of implementation. I want to address that because that's important for all of us, for Americans, and what we have been, in a larger sense, I guess we've been being held hostage by cheap labor in other countries, and that has caused American labor, of course, to spiral downward in terms of the pay, the products, and such. So keep this is something that I really want to, at some point, address, because this is what President Donald Trump has really done for our nation. One of his big wins, I believe, is the fixing the unlevel or the tilted playing field against our economy. So many things in the last 600 days that he's done, 620 days that he's done, that he has not gotten credit for. And he's correct in his rallies. He was at a rally, I think it was West Virginia this weekend. It made a lot of assertive statements there. I'm going to get into some of those as well. But in the meantime, here's what I'm keeping my eye on. This is something interesting that happened in my home state of Pennsylvania, Allentown. Center City of Allentown, Pennsylvania, Saturday afternoon, late afternoon, 9:30 p.m. on Saturday, Allentown, Pennsylvania, 700 block of Turner Street, at the intersection of Hall Street, about a block away from the PPL Center, which, by the way, was hosting a Lehigh Valley Phantoms preseason game. That game ended within minutes of the blast, but there was something that happened. It was a car explosion. Now, having been a first responder in a previous life back in the 1970s, before we were called first responders, and having seen many car fires and many incidents, just of all types, deaths and through trauma, car accidents, and I mean, you just name it. This got my attention, because this explosion, if you didn't hear about this, again, 9:30 in the evening, Allentown, Pennsylvania. This happened on Saturday. A car that was parked, as I mentioned, downtown, 700 block of Turner Street at Hall Street. Three individuals inside this car reportedly. And this car exploded. Now, we are not talking about just a car fire and then the gas tank exploding. Folks, when a car catches fire, this is not like something on television where a car hits a bridge abutment and suddenly explodes. We're not talking about Ford Pintos here. as alleged, you know, way back when. No, we're talking usually a car when it catches fire. It's really kind of a non-event. Even when it hits the gas tank, it's not the Hollywood-esque picture you would envision. However, this explosion was remarkable in the sense that it shook buildings blocks away. The debris from this explosion, including body parts from the individuals inside, I don't want to be graphic, and I'm sorry about that, several blocks away, two blocks, three blocks away, pieces of the car and the people inside. And again, it's not my intent to be graphic. I'm just stating the facts here. Now, the investigative authorities, ATF, as well as other federal, state, and local investigative bodies are looking at this. And obviously, this is a criminal act. We don't have a motive yet. We don't have any kind of really any information except that this car exploded, three people inside. The investigative authorities stated that it's their belief that the perpetrator, now whatever that means, aside from the obvious, was one of the victims. Now, if you think about the world in which we live today, and the war that we are fighting against terrorists with multiple motives, but you know the obvious, the Islamic terrorist component. If you look at the Middle East and how they use IEDs, vehicles as weapons and car bombs and such, and given the fact that this vehicle was located not far from a game that was being let out, you know, I believe it was middle school or high school preseason game. Man, you've got to take a good hard look at this. It was it was high school. The individuals leaving a basketball game. So the proximity is disturbing. The level of the magnitude of this explosion is extremely disturbing. You don't see this rarely. Rarely, if ever, do you see this. As a matter of fact, this explosion is in terms of the sound and the shaking the ground and such, has been compared with the natural gas explosion recently. That's how big this was. This is not the kind of explosion from a pound of tannerite, okay, or just black powder. I mean, no. This is something that everyone should be looking at this. We're watching this closely here. I'm watching this closely because we need to follow up on this. We need to find out who the individuals in the vehicle are or were, and the motives. And so I'll keep you posted on this. But huge news. It's really not getting a lot of coverage, but extremely important to follow. That's on a micro level here. All right. Now, as I mentioned before, we're witnessing the systematic obstruction and political destruction here within America. It's interesting, over the weekend, something happened over the weekend, and I was going to take to the airwaves, but I did not, and I'm saving it for today. Something happened over the weekend, obviously, the doxing issue. Now, if you don't know what doxing is, merely what doxing is identifying, publishing or posting individuals' names, addresses, personal information, telephone numbers on the internet. In this case, it was Wikipedia. And three high-profile individuals, were doxxed. Now, I was watching this unfold on social networking, specifically on Twitter this weekend. And I think it's important also to be aware of, because this is part of the tactics of the Democratic Socialists that we need to pay very close attention to. The personal information of Senators Lindsey Graham, Mike Lee, and Orrin Hatch, that personal information was posted to Wikipedia this past Thursday during the Supreme Court hearing, or the Supreme Court, the nomination process for Judge Kavanaugh. What happened this weekend, however, was an individual, and this rolled, the event was not just a static event. This was an evolving process. So that information was posted to Wikipedia. It was removed. Now, you understand, Wikipedia, of course, can be edited by virtually anyone. And there are records of who edits what and such, but that's fine. But keep that in the back of your mind. But this weekend, it came to a public head anyway, where individuals on Twitter had posted investigation and research findings that led to Senator Maxine Waters' office. Now, people might argue and say, well, wait a minute, this happened Thursday and Friday. It's really not new news. Well, over the weekend, Maxine Waters came out and issued a public statement, a couple of public statements. As a matter of fact, it was, I think it was Friday. It was September 29th that she issued her first public statement on this. I'm sorry, that would have been Saturday, September 29th. Representative Maxine Waters' statement on false allegations regarding the leak of personal information of U.S. senators. Consider the fact that you are in a closed group, by the way, of high-profile people, senators of the United States, the home addresses, home telephone numbers. This information is closely protected. Although it can be found, it's generally closely protected by the senators themselves. Well, the individuals on Twitter had identified the IP, the internet address, or the origin of the origin, coming from a staffer in Maxine Waters' office. In other words, backtracing the posting, the editing, and such to Maxine Waters' office and a staffer at her office. So this led to Maxine Waters coming out on Saturday, issuing a written statement and publishing it on Twitter and on her website and elsewhere, saying, no, it's wrong, it's a lie. As a matter of fact, I will cite from the Saturday, the very unusual public posting on Saturday. Congresswoman Maxine Waters issued the following statement, and here's exactly what she said: lies, lies, and more despicable lies. She wrote that, I am utterly disgusted by the spread of the completely false, absurd, and dangerous lies and conspiracy theories that are being peddled by, now listen to this, ultra-right-wing pundits, outlets, and websites who are promoting a fraudulent claim that a member of my staff was responsible. Responsible for what? For the release of the personal information of members of the United States Senate on Wikipedia. She goes on to say that this unfounded allegation is completely false and is an absolute lie. Now, she writes this, again, continuing. The United States Capitol Police and our internal IT specialists have determined that the IP address in question does not belong to my office or anyone on my staff. The member of my staff, whose identity, personal information, and safety have been compromised as a result of these fraudulent and false allegations, was in no way responsible for the leak of this information. My office has alerted the appropriate authorities and law enforcement entities of these fraudulent claims. Okay, so this is a bigger story than just the posting of the personal information of Senators Graham, Mike Lee, and Orrin Hatch on Wikipedia. This is a much bigger story in an insight into what's really going on behind the curtain, behind the scenes. And again, the planned destruction here within our nation. This is important for many respects, and not some of the obvious. I mean, it goes beyond the obvious. And I think that we have to focus our attention not to what is obvious, not the fact that these individuals were doxxed or that there was attribution via an internet research to the office of Maxine Waters. But how this is playing out in the template, the course of criminal conduct, and yes, I said criminal, because what we're seeing here is a criminal, it's a crime to do certain things, especially to release information, to access databases, and to publish information to cause ultimately harassment and other consequences from publishing this information. But there's something else going on here that we need to take a good hard look at. And of course, that is what we've seen happen. Maxine Waters had said herself, look, if you find people like Sarah Sanders and you remember what she said. She advocated among her followers to form into mobs and physically confront members of the Donald Trump administration if they see them in public. Remember that? Now, I'm not going to play the audio clip, but you remember that. It's a tactic of the left. It's a tactic of the Democratic Socialists. And this is something we need to pay attention to, because we are fighting this war of the plan of a personal political destruction and destruction itself. Let me advance it to this. 36 days away from the midterm elections. Imagine putting a sign out on your front lawn, a campaign sign, saying, oh, I'm for whatever candidate. It doesn't matter. Obviously, you've identified yourself and your political leanings through that yard sign. Now, imagine a mob unhappy with your political choice, breaking your windows or keying a car or causing property destruction, or even worse, something even worse at your household. Now, you may think, well, this happens. It's happened before. It happened in the 2016 election. It's going to keep happening. Well, imagine there being a group of individuals nationally organized through mail lists and such on the internet that are doing this, that have this underground network that say, okay, for example, Sarah Sanders is going to be at this restaurant at this time, or we've got a sighting of Orrin Hatch, or we've got a sighting of insert name of senator here. We need a rapid response team and go and organize and form into a mob and just harass the heck out of whoever. Get them, make them leave the restaurant, make them leave the, shame them in the public venue. This is what I've found, and through my investigation, is in progress. Now, the FBI is aware of this. The police are aware of this group and these groups. And this is nationwide. Who are involved in this. Now, again, you might say, well, wait a minute, Doug, this is not news. Well, hang on, because when you start to trace back, when you start looking back as to who is doing this, who are these groups, or who's behind this group, or these members, who are actually engaged in these tactics, you will find that they are connected to the very offices, as stated here, despite the denials of members of Congress. And when you follow the money trail, man, you will see that the money leads back to, well, obviously George Soros and his groups, in my professional reasoned opinion, based on my research, my investigative research. So, this is a very much a battle on the ground, a battle among foot soldiers. But it is a tilted battle, because the people who have access to certain information are pushing this information out, using the media, for one, as a fifth column. In fact, some members of the media are doing this themselves, are engaged in this activity themselves, although not directly, but behind the scenes. You've got staffers and permanent employees of the federal government acting as not just this systematic obstruction, But flip this around, and the activism against the conservatives in an attempt to harass, annoy, and ultimately the consequences here, you're looking at forming lynch mobs against conservatives, and especially Christian conservatives. You see the systematic destruction. Everyone's talking about, or obstruction, everyone's talking about, of course, the nomination process for Judge Kavanaugh and how this process is being obstructed. Well, we know all of that. And we know about the lies associated with this and how this came to be. Or at least if you've been paying attention. I'm gonna address one thing about the Kavanaugh Ford accusation, or the Ford accusations here, because I think, in case you did not see this, this is so important to understand the lies that were attributed to Christine Blasey Ford. And by the way, Rachel Mitchell, the prosecutor, in quotation marks, finger quotes, that asked the questions during the nomination process, or asked the questions of both Ford and Kavanaugh, issued a hard copy report as well. Did you see this that came out? Oh my goodness. it was pretty articulate and pretty damning to Kavanaugh's accuser. So all of this, so I'll get to that. In fact, I'll post a link in the program description box, because this is critical for everyone to really understand what is going on. We can take the view at the cruising altitude, and we can kind of see the players. But in this case, the details are what's critical. Because by looking at the details, and by looking at the various individuals, you can see perhaps what's going on in your area if you live in the United States. Or even on a global level, you can see if you're listening to this in Canada or in Europe or Australia or New Zealand, you'll be able to identify the people in your area as well if we look close enough. But certainly this is coming from within the United States and coming from certain individuals and groups that you wouldn't ordinarily say, man, they're behind this, but yeah, they are. So I would look at, I said all of that to say this. I would look at the denial issued by Maxine Waters a little bit, you know, hold on a second, because when you look at the tracing, the IP tracing, and anyone, just by the way, anyone can send an email or create a post and make it look like it's coming from another computer. For example, I don't personally know how to do this, but there are experts who can do this, and hackers, but there are also experts who can identify this. But you know, somebody could send an email, or somebody could make a posting and make it look like it came from your computer. It's just that's called misdirected attribution, and that's a tactic. Of course, it's a counter forensic measure. However, that too can be through investigation can be taken apart. And the real attribution, or the real actors or perpetrators, can be identified. And in this case, by looking at the investigation conducted, not just the one, the information posted on Twitter or social networking, but looking at the handshakes, the electronic handshakes and such, boy, I'll tell you what, it does appear that the information did come from within that Senate Judiciary Committee. And you can take it from there. It looks like it was internally. In other words, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, staffers perhaps, whether or not they were acting in concert with or with the approval of the senators themselves, or senator themselves, herself or himself, had done this. I mean, it looks to me like a legitimate, when you go through all of the electronic processes and you look at the forensic analysis, the computer digital forensic analysis of this, it certainly looks like it was an internal hit job. So now combine that with the massive, the effective, I should say, and well-funded groups belonging to the Democratic Socialists out there who have email lists and who are refining every single day. They are refining their processes. To obstruct and to really engage in battle on the ground. Man, you're looking at, you are really looking at a formula for something bad about to happen. And don't forget, remember Steve Scalise. Remember the shooting at that baseball field last year. My goodness. This, for as much as the left references, for example, Pizzagate and some guy walking into a pizza shop in Washington, D.C., firing a shot into a wall, striking no one. I mean, I'm not dismissing that. But for as much as the left says, wait, see, this is the consequence of talking about Pizzagate or just claiming that there's a conspiracy here. What are they doing? And you have to ask yourself, is this the Alinsky yes tactic of projection? Yes. In my view, yes. This is what's absolutely, they're engaged in this. You know, something about this, though, and I've often talked about the Department of Justice, and we're going to be getting, I'm going to be getting into the Department of Justice, Rod Rosenstein, because remember, this week's going to be a critical week as well. Rod Rosenstein, Donald Trump, the Department of Justice, and the midterm elections, by the way, I believe will determine the fate of the Department of Justice. But having said that, let's talk about the Department of Justice for a second, because they could investigate this, and I believe to some extent members are, but hold that thought. But think about this. The Department of Justice, it's one of the largest federal agencies. They've got 116,476 employees. They receive a base compensation of $10.24 billion. That number is from 2016. The bonuses by the individuals working at the Department of Justice, you can tack on another $29 million to that. The average compensation for somebody working at the Department of Justice with benefits is $115,177. Again, these numbers are from 2016. And you want to know who the highest paid employee of the Department of Justice is? Get a load of this. The chief psychiatrist for the Federal Bureau of Prisons. That salary, $260,000 per year, plus benefits. So I'm going to be taking a good hard look at the Department of Justice as the programs from today unfold, because we're at a critical junction here in America, again, 36 days out from the midterms. Now, before I go into additional content here, I just want to take you back. Remember, I was on hiatus for about 30 days, for exactly 30 days. Brought back the program, of course, to right in time for to address what's taking place within the Department of Justice, as I just mentioned, and of course the Supreme Court nomination process, and in advance of the midterms. And don't forget, we were the Hagman Report, the flagship show, was subjected to this YouTube censorship and all this. But anyway, I want to thank those people. I want to thank my listeners to the Hagman Report. Thank you so much for your support, and thank you so much for spreading the word about the Doug Hagman Radio Show. #DHRS. If we can make that a thing, that'd be great. Thank you so much for spreading the word about this program, because this is an intense hour. And I do hope that some people, obviously, are using taking notes, because there's a lot of important information, some names, some dates, some numbers that I give out that all tie together, especially at the end of every episode, but episodes as a whole. But it was during that hiatus that my wife and I were thinking about fall, which it's coming up, of course. Well, one might argue we're already into fall. And you're looking at going back to school. But here at the Hagman household and with the Doug Hagman Radio Show, this is a very personal endeavor for me, because I like to bring forth the best information possible in the shortest period of time. Just a condensed version of the flagship show, but on a different, more granular level. The reason I mention all of this, it was during this hiatus period, during this off time period, that I was looking, you know, I just wondered, I put the feelers out, hey, you know, if I could find a great company, just a great company that would sponsor this program, that would assist in the in what I do here. Because it takes, as I often mention, for every hour of content, it takes 2 to 3 hours of research. Well, I found a great company. As a matter of fact, at the Hagman household, we are so delighted to have Grove Collaborative as a sponsor of the Doug Hagman Radio Show. This is a fantastic. Have you heard about this company? Have you heard about Grove.co? If not, let me explain. Let me tell you, because, and I want to welcome them to our family, larger family of sponsors. But specifically for the Doug Hagman Radio Show, Grove.co/HH. Now write that down or remember that. Grove.co/HH. At the Hagman household, we like things to be clean. I like fresh. I like clean. I like simple. I like, when I go home, I like cozy. At the office, I like clean. Of course, in the studio, I like clean. Well, grove.co/HH. They've got a tremendous array of products. You know, Mrs. Meyer's products, for example. You've heard of them. Method, seventh generation. Grove.co/HH. They have you covered for all of your cleaning and organization needs as you head into fall. And they become a sponsor. And just so delighted to welcome Grove.co/HH as a sponsor of the Hagman Report. But let me tell you this. Again, my wife especially, we like clean. We like orderly. But we're also conscious. Yes, we're conscious of the environment. Yes, we're conscious of the toxicity of different products. I mean, there's a balance, and you've got to be responsible, of course, when you're using cleaning products and whether it's air fresheners or whatever the case might be. Well, my wife actually had said, you know, I really like Grove.co, and as a matter of fact, we were able to secure them as sponsors. As a sponsor of the Doug Hagman Radio Show. But let me tell you what Grove.co/HH is. It's a company that cares about your needs. Grove Collaborative is a recurring shipment service that delivers all natural home, beauty, and personal care products directly to your door. Their aim is to make living a healthy lifestyle choice easy and accessible for you and your family. Every product that they sell is backed by the Grove standard, which means that it's healthy, it's effective, it's eco-friendly, it's affordable. They don't test beauty products, for example, on pets. And you can shop with confidence knowing that everything you buy from them is good for you, your family, your home, and the planet. And right now, our household, as a matter of fact, our studio and office have nothing but Grove products. It's, a recurring shipment service. And after your first Grove order, they'll set you up with personalized scheduled Grove shipments every 30 days so you never run out of the products you love. The shipments are 100% customizable. You've got complete control over what products you get when you want to receive them. It's a great service. And this year, Mrs. Myers has released a brand new seasonal scent for fall. It's pumpkin. We've got it going in the Hagman house. Oh, it smells exactly how it looks. Clean, simple, cozy. It's that scent of fall that you look for. Oh, it smells so good. I'm tempted to use it year-round, actually. But you can set your, for example, in choices of scents, apple, cider, pumpkin, mum. And you know, Mrs. Meyer's fall hand soap, dish soap, multi-surface spray, they've got it all. Plus, if you spend $39, you'll also receive a free Grove cleaning caddy to organize all of your favorite supplies. I love that too. I like to be organized, and I love the cleaning caddy. So grove.co/HH, they've got you covered for all of your cleaning and organization needs as you head into fall. You can find an amazing selection of natural household products from brands like Mrs. Meyer's, Method, 7th Generation. But here's what you need to do. If you've been thinking about trying Grove Collaborative, or if you've never heard it, you got to check them out. And this is your chance for a very special offer. When you sign up using my specific link, you'll get the free fall set plus free shipping and a free 60-day VIP trial. But you've got to hurry. This offer expires on 11/11. That's right. It expires on 11/11. So do it after you hear the show, after the show's over. Go to Grove, G-R-O-V-E, grove.co/HH to get started. That's grove.co/HH. Okay? grove.co/HH. Again, grove.co/HH. And you'll see right on the top there, on when you get there, if you put the slash HH there, you'll see a little note, the offer from Doug Hagman. Do it today. Check them out. Oh, my wife loves it. And you know how my wife's got these very high standards of cleanliness and, everything's got to look good, smell good, and be organized. And I do too. So check them out. And thank you, folks, for supporting my sponsor and our sponsors in general. But thank you for supporting the sponsor of this show. All right. The reason I took so long, by the way, on this is because we want, or at least I want, this information to get out there as far and wide as possible. The information that I provide during the Doug Hagman radio show, the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour, I want this information to get out there as far as wide as possible. I believe that the distillation of this information that I'm providing for you in this show is so critical, because it's like a Cliff Notes version with the depth necessary to make decisions about the midterms, make decisions about the individuals, to provide investigative, not just investigative summaries, but investigative reports in detail. The things that you need to know to get your day started, but also to get your week and month started. This is tomorrow's headlines today, as I like to say. So again, thank you, Grove. Now, let me just mention the overview. If we pull out to another, or if we pull back once more to a larger view here, when you look back to the 2016 presidential election, remember that the streets of Manhattan, Washington, Chicago, Philadelphia, and so on, San Francisco, when you remember the pictures, they seemed like war zones. Did you notice, however, the orchestration behind the outbursts of vandalism and violence, whether they be verbal or in physical assaults against the newly elected president supporters and anyone who voted for him? Go back to 2016 and look at, for example, the Los Angeles Times. Many of the protesters, the rioters, were young people who never before protested. And in some cases, the crowds were very well organized and very well manipulated by professional agitators funded by left-wing groups and international anarchist organizations. Now, when you look at the televised images that showed thousands of mostly young people marching in front of Trump Tower in D.C. or New York, specifically New York. New York hates you, not my president. When you saw that for several days running, there were anti-Donald Trump demonstrations around the country as left-wing activists, young people on college campuses, took up the chant to resist and obstruct, vowing to make it difficult, if not impossible, for the presidency of Donald Trump to succeed, which he has done despite the odds. Now, this resistance that I'm referencing had taken on and is taking on, continuing to take on many forms. But none, and this is where it applies today, none has been more disruptive than the effort to block Donald Trump's nominations to the courts. Now, I was speaking with my attorney this past Friday, about a matter that we're dealing with here. And he said, did you know that we have a new district court judge? And I said, well, I heard something about it, obviously. So we had about a 5 or 10 minute discussion. Now, my attorney, and believe me, it's no surprise, he was not a Donald Trump fan, but he said something that really piqued my interest on Friday. He said, you know something? For the first time I can remember, in recent years, we now have a fully seated judiciary in Western Pennsylvania, at least in the venue which he was referencing. We're fully staffed. Now, when the president, when Donald Trump, well, when the president began the nomination process for judicial appointments, there were more than 100 vacancies to be filled. But there was little doubt the minority party, little doubt. No one doubted that they would mount this intense counteroffensive to block as many of Trump's appointments as possible. And we saw this, and we're seeing this today. By means of various political and judicial maneuvers, the Republican Senate had successfully prevented, obviously, the Obama administration from packing the courts with liberal jurists. However, now some of the Never Trumpers and, of course, the individuals on the within the Uniparty are engaged. We see this, of course, with the SCOTUS nomination. We see this with Kavanaugh, and we're going to see it henceforth. Trump's supporters have celebrated the victories so far, but Donald Trump's plans to shift the courts back to the right. Okay, when you look at how ever since FDR, you look at, for example, the federal courts as well as the Supreme Court, for the most part, it's been a left-leaning bias. Now Donald Trump comes in and he's shifting the courts back to the right, but this is coming under extremely strong resistance from the Democratic Socialist, using political tactics that even U.S. News and World Report described as comparable to guerrilla warfare. And this is exactly what is being discussed and plotted in the aforementioned message boards, email lists, and such that I was referring to. Now, when you follow, okay, Stephen Strang, we had him on our flagship show not too long ago. As a matter of fact, I should put up a link to that interview. He has a book called Trump Aftershock. Man, it's a great book. It's not out yet. I've got an advanced reader's copy. Trump Aftershock. You've got to order this or pre-order this book because there's so much information in this. Again, Stephen Strang, Trump Aftershock is the title of the book. But he goes into some great detail about this. And he even stated that by following arcane legislative rules, withholding approval of home state nominees and obstructing Trump's nominees in every way possible, Democrats, or I'll say Democratic Socialists, are determined to grind President Trump's judicial agenda to a halt. And we're seeing that again. We're seeing that play out at the SCOTUS or the Supreme Court level. Now, the success of these tactics, they've left the justice system with so many vacancies that legal analysts on both sides, they started calling it a judicial crisis. Heck, my own attorney said that the case log, because of what was taking place, because of this obstructionist policy, justice delayed is justice denied. The backlog of cases at the federal level is just unbelievable. You're talking a year, maybe two, before cases can be heard in some cases. Now, the Democrats are playing politics. The Democratic Socialists are playing politics and putting up huge roadblocks to confirmations all across the United States. They're attempting to use every procedural tactic that they can to block any person that President Trump nominates. Now, in particular, the Democratic Socialists have taken pains to block nominees who express their strongly conservative or Christian views. And right in tandem with that, we're seeing anyone who supports the judicial nominees on Twitter, Facebook, they get shadow banned. Or they get banned, period. YouTube, same thing. But Donald Trump is aggressively pursuing his agenda to install strict constitutionalists on the federal bench. He continues to press the Congress for results. Did you notice, I try to give you the number of days. This is day 620 in office. By Donald Trump's 6 month in office, he had nominated 18 people for district court vacancies. Think about this now. By his 6 month in office, the president, Donald Trump, had nominated 18 people for district court vacancies, 14 for the circuit courts and the Court of Federal Claims, and 23 for U.S. attorneys. And I got to say, the Western District of Pennsylvania was one of those areas. Now, Business Insider, as they reported during that same time frame in Barack Obama's first term, Obama had nominated just 4 district judges, 5 appeals court judges, and 13 U.S. attorneys. Now, in total, President Trump nominated 55 people. That's within the same period. And Obama just 22. Now, what's going on with that? That is obstruction. That is systematic obstruction by Obama, by keeping these seats open. The pace of nominations, however, along with President Donald Trump's refusal to change directions, this is what's provoking the Democratic Socialists to intensify their resistance. Now, the liberals fear the confirmation of so many conservative judges across the federal courts, all across the country, will have long-term impact on the justice system, period. Jeopardizing the progressive / socialist / communist agenda for generations to come. Now, the downside of the Democratic Socialist strategy is that the level of obstruction has created a procedural crisis for the courts and overall for the justice system. Extremely important cases that should have been heard, well, they're being delayed for an unreasonable length of time. And some may be held in limbo for years. Again, this is personal to me. In one case, and I've talked about this before, 3 years this November in the federal court system. But the systematic obstruction has made it next to impossible for many well-qualified individuals to survive the confirmation process. And are we not seeing this? Did we not see this play out last week? Absolutely. And as Donald Trump tweeted on March 14th, 2018, you know, hundreds of good people, including very important ambassadors and judges, are being blocked and or slow walked by the Democrats in the Senate. He also added that many important positions in the government are unfilled because of this obstruction. It's the worst time in U.S. history. And the liberal fact-checking agency at the Tampa Bay Times PolitiFact, only 50% or 57% of President Trump's nominees had been confirmed at the time of that specific tweet, well below Obama's 67%. And you take it even back further, George Bush, for example, 78%, Clinton, George H.W. Bush, both with 81%. So what are we seeing today? Again, look at the current topic of everyone's interest, the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. This systematic obstruction goes far and beyond anything we've seen to date. So you had Obama as acting, you know, in his capacity at the Oval Office, deliberately avoiding nominating and placing in individuals that could not pass Republican-held or conservative-leaning nomination process. So he didn't appoint anybody for that very reason. That caused a judicial crisis. And that caused the very crisis that we're seeing today. We've got to look a little bit bigger now when we're looking at the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. You got to go back to the tactics of Obama, the tactics of the Democratic Socialists. Frankly, this is exactly the consequence. What we saw last week with Kavanaugh, and we're seeing today with Brett Kavanaugh, stems from the policies and the workings of Obama. Let me get into it a little bit deeper. And cite, by the way, Kristen Soltis Anderson. She writes in the Washington Examiner, and this is a very telling statement. "We are a nation divided, and we're even divided about why we're divided. But if one thing does unify us, is that there is a pervasive sense across ideological and partisan lines that something about the way we are living today simply feels unsustainable." In this article, she goes on to say that we are experiencing a fraying of our nation that makes it harder to imagine any other big issues like the cost of living or national security seeing improvement. More than 3 in 4 Americans think that we are greatly divided, a figure that is the highest figure recorded in decades. Now, the reason I mention this, and this again is a quote from Kristen Soltis Anderson in the Washington Examiner, is look at last week. This was the objective of the Obama / Clinton machine. The Democratic Socialist voters are angry. Now, if they can't, for example, impeach President Donald Trump, the goal here is to block him every step of the way. Outside of the Democrats, Democratic Socialists, most voters don't really want more gridlock or conflict. There's a recent poll done. And in fact, this poll was published, I'm looking for the poll, where this poll or who did this poll, but 70%, according to this poll, most voters don't want Congress to open impeachment hearings against President Donald Trump, but 70% of Democrats do. When asked if they would like to have a Democratic Congress as a check and balance on President Trump, Democratic voters overwhelmingly say yes, but only 3 out of 10 independents agree, and 21% of independents say that they would prefer a Republican Congress to support the president. Now, why did I bring this up? It seems like it's obvious, but why? Because what we saw last week, what we're seeing today, is this systematic obstruction. And it's throwing our government into chaos, throwing our way of life into chaos, rending our moral and cultural fabric. And this is all of this can be combined when you look at the open borders policy, when you look at the sanctuary cities, when you look at the lawlessness of the Department of Justice, when you look across the board at every aspect of our government today, I contend that every aspect that we're seeing today of this division was set in motion by Obama. And I'm going to say Clinton too, because if you go back to 2012 or go back to 2008, even at the end of George Bush, people were sick of Bush, the Bush family. In 2008, you saw this refreshing Obama come in, right? Hope and change. And then as that was set in motion, there was obviously some type of agreement made with the Clinton cabal where, okay, Hillary, you're next. And remember, she was supposed to be the shoe-in for 2016. And I bring this up only to put everything in perspective, because everything that we're seeing today is a consequence, I believe, of the planned destruction and the systematic takedown of our nation that originated back in 2008. So, just to be clear, you got to look back at 2008, and if you're uncomfortable doing that, or if you want to get further ahead or advance in time, just look at what happened in 2016. Of course, with that election, and everyone was calling for change, not the same old policies of Obama, not the same old deep state or permanent state, and they got change in the form of Donald Trump, obviously. But look at the number, go back and consider the number of Republicans running in the 2016 election. And I would urge you to take a look at all of the individuals, all of the candidates, from Ted Cruz to Santorum to Rubio and everyone. The discontent that we felt collectively as a society back in 2016. And finally, when Donald Trump, the reality TV star, the casino owner, the womanizer and all, whatever. Finally, when this outsider was voted in, instead of Van Jones, and I mention this often, instead of Van Jones's white lash, as he described it, it was a whiplash. And the whiplash was a good whiplash, if there's such a thing, because obviously it's not the same old uniparty in Washington. Now, that said, take a look at where we are today. And well, even before that, when you look at leading up to, or the events leading up to the election, and you look at other aspects of this, you look at what Obama did. Consider this. By the end of Obama's second term, and I don't know how many people know this, Obama had issued 276 executive orders. Now, there was an article in Forbes magazine that's not even the most disturbing of his regime's decrees. Confidential memoranda and agency guidance publications would be the most problematic for President Donald Trump, because lesser known directives, they don't appear in the Federal Register. And to uncover them is tricky at best. To rescind them is even more difficult. Consider what I just said. 276 executive orders. Yes, shocking by itself. But it's not the executive orders. It's the confidential memoranda, agency guidance publications that avoid disclosure, avoid FOIA disclosure. And again, this was the plan laid out by Obama, and the torch was going to be picked up by Hillary Clinton. She was well aware and is well aware of those internal memoranda. When Donald Trump obtained or successfully was elected president of the United States, all of that went out the window. So what I'm saying to you is the very nature, as Stephen Strang calls it, the Trump aftershock. That's what we're seeing today, that the deep state attempting to sustain or regain power, or sustain and regain power in the 2018 midterms. All of this is the systematic obstruction and the planned destruction laid forth in the last 8 years. I hope that made sense to you, because it's not what you see. It's not the obvious. It's not the open legislation. It's not even the executive orders, the 276 by the end of his second term. No, no. Obama had laid in or had created many confidential memoranda and agency guidance that caused or is causing what we're seeing today, from the gridlock to the obstruction to the destruction. And much of this cannot be accessed through FOIA, and even much of it can't be identified readily, even at the executive level, which is crazy to think about, let alone rescinded. But he's doing the best, Donald Trump is doing the best he can, as we have seen over the past 620 days. I didn't get a chance to get into the accomplishments or the other factors, but keep your eyes on certain things. So as I open the program from that blast in Pennsylvania, you're going to be hearing more about that. You're going to be following that. To all of the obstructionist, the systematic obstruction that's going on and the planned destruction, oh, I've got so much more. We could talk for hours on end. Folks, hey, support my new sponsor, Grove.co. That's grove.co/HH. Support them. Check them out. And folks, if you like what you heard, please spread this among social media. And please check back again tomorrow for the Doug Hagman Radio Show, and tonight for that flagship show.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report.
Tune in to the Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.